The following is an unrehearsed interview with Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Participating in today's public affairs program are Nathan Kahns of Carroll Broadcasting and Andy Holman with the Southeast Iowa Union. Nathan, you can start us off with a question for Senator Grassley.
I just wanted to get your thoughts. Recently, I think it was last week, early last week, President Biden came out with his executive actions or proposed executive actions to address gun violence, things like banning ghost guns, stabilizing braces for AR pistols, and really expanding background checks. But he made a comment along the lines of saying no amendment is absolute. I just wondered what your response to that would be, that particular comment.
Well, constitutionally, he's right from the standpoint of the First Amendment freedom of speech. There's a century-old Supreme Court decision that says that if you're in a theater, you can't yell fire, so everybody runs out and gets stomped on. So, in a sense, he's right. But if he's trying to say that the Second Amendment is less important than the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment of privacy or the Fifth Amendment on property or the Sixth Amendment on juries, they're all Bill of Rights, and they all have equal importance and ought to be sustained the same way. And if he had made that speech 20 years ago, I might say he's right. But that he's got a basis for saying that the Second Amendment might be less than other rights in the Bill of Rights. But in the last 10 to 15 years, there's been two Supreme Court decisions that have pretty much settled the question of whether the Second Amendment applies to an individual as opposed to the militia being able to have firearms. Andy?
Yes, thank you, Senator Grassley. It's a pleasure to speak with you. Senator, let me ask the question about immigration. I know that this issue at the border has gotten a lot of coverage. Of course, a lot of people are stuck in limbo, and people are trying to get into the country. They can't go into detention centers and being turned around back into Mexico. My sense is that a lot of this problem could be solved by just making it easier for people to come legally. What do you think about that?
Well, yes, and there's a few areas like agricultural workers and professional people like engineers and maybe even seasonal workers to some extent, and there's some of that going on right now, but there's some more need. If you could ever get a bill that simple up on the floor of the United States Senate and not have it amended with more controversial stuff dealing with immigration, you could probably pass a bill like that 70-30, but particularly in agriculture. And even in my 24 town meetings that I had out in Iowa over the last 2 weeks of Easter recess, the need for agricultural workers came up more than once. And you could do it. But the trouble is, when you get a simple little immigration bill out on the floor of the United States Senate, everybody wants to amend it to death, so you never get 60 votes to get anything passed. Back to Nathan.
I kind of want to follow along that same line of thought, talking less about maybe immigration, but just bills being, as you put it, amended to death. So it was, about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, that was kind of the end of earmarks on bills up there in the legislature. And since that time, bills have grown to 800, 900, 1,000-plus pages. And just has there been any push within either the Senate or in the House that you're aware of to try and make bills a little simpler in terms of their language rather than encompassing 50 different topics?
Yeah. The answer is some very long bills, like the one that we call H.R. 1 to federalize federal election laws, don't include anything other than that. I think the Senate bill is 800 pages if it ever gets passed. And so there's an example of a bill that deals just with the election laws that wouldn't have a whole bunch of other stuff in it. Where it generally happens is on appropriation bills. At the end of the year when you might get close to shutting down government, and nobody wants to shut government down. And consequently, then a few people that want something big has people in their clutches if they would not consent to move ahead, and can get some things like that that are unrelated. But the rules in the House don't really allow that very much. But we don't have very many rules that you call on amendments, that the amendments have to be germane. And so that's a problem in the Senate that the House doesn't have. Andy?
Senator, I wanted to ask you a question about the filibuster, because the filibuster has changed quite a bit over the years. You used to have to hold the floor and actually speak during it, and then Congress got to the point where you're making so many laws, and the breadth of expertise was such that they wanted to make it easier for senators or congressmen to employ the filibuster. Do you think that we reached a point where the filibuster is actually preventing compromise, and that the Senate would be better off without it?
If you want the House or the Senate to be like the House of Representatives, just do away with the 60-vote requirement and have 51 people get whatever they want, and that would be the majority party ignoring the minority party. So if you're like I am, you go out in the state and listen to your constituents, you invariably get a question like, how come you guys can't get along? Like, they see too much partisanship, and there is too much. But I said to them, you know, if you eliminate the 60-vote requirement, it's the only, when you got a 50-50 Senate, it's the only way that you're going to force compromise. Even if you have a 53 Republicans, 47 Democrats, like the last 2 years, you can't get anything done. So if you want bipartisanship, the Senate's the only place you're going to get it, because in the House of Representatives, the majority party can ignore the minority. You can't do that in the Senate. And then you say slowing things down. If you read the Federalist Papers, John Madison or James Madison writing the Constitution, he explained it that the Senate was supposed to be a deliberative body. Back to Nathan.
I did want to take a look at the infrastructure bill from the Biden administration, the $2 trillion one. I've heard some concerns from farmers here in my listening area that there's some concerns that there's some aspects of the Green New Deal, particularly looking at limiting fuel sources for vehicles and making kind of a shift to electric cars, and how that might impact Iowa's economy and in particular the ethanol industry. Are those concerns valid in your opinion?
Yes, and even without the bill coming out, they were concerns of my constituents, and I've addressed it this way. If by 2025, half the cars sold have to be electric, and if by 2135, all of them have to be, 2035, they all have to be electric, then we're not going to have 43,000 jobs in the ethanol industry. So it's very much an aspect of a threat to ethanol. Andy?
Senator Grassley, what are your thoughts on a carbon tax? Because some people have thought about a carbon tax as a very simple way, it's with the fewest economic distortion, as a way of taxing pollution as a means for fighting climate change.
Yeah. I'll give you two answers. One, it's a better way to do it than have a lot of regulation on greenhouse gases. But agriculture is a highly energy-intensive industry, and it would be very bad for agriculture. Back to Nathan.
Turning our attention back to what's going on at the border, recently the Biden administration was reaching out to individual states, seeing if they could house some of the individuals at the border, particularly children. Governor Reynolds has turned down the administration's request for them to do that. In the past, Iowa history, of course, Governor Ray, pretty well known for housing refugees in his time in the governorship. Just interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, just answered this question for KXL in Waterloo. Here's my answer, too. Number one, if the governor has authority to do that, what she said when she did it, and I don't know for sure if a governor can keep refugees out of people that are offered the refugees or willing to take care of them. But let's say she does have that constitutional authority. She said that I'm not going to take them because it's Biden's fault. And it is Biden's fault because he took down or didn't finish the fence and he opened the border up, invited people in more or less. So from that standpoint, on the other hand, that position is a little bit contrary to what Iowa's reputation is on refugees going back to Governor Ray in the 1970s when we took a disproportionate number of Vietnamese people to come to Iowa. And for the most part, I think the Vietnamese people have added a lot to the culture and the economy of Iowa. Andy, and you'll be the last question.
Okay. Senator, what do you think of the prospect of turning the D.C. into the 51st state? And I guess I'm wondering, if it does not become a state, how can we get the people representation in the Senate?
Well, they don't. Obviously, you know, I can tell from your question, you know that they have a representative in the House of Representatives. They don't have a voice in the Senate. So let me answer your question from a constitutional point of view. The Constitution refers to something like the federal district. In other words, when they were writing the Constitution, they didn't want the federal government to be under the jurisdiction of any one state. So they said, we're going to set up a federal district. So this leads me to believe that it was never anticipated that D.C. be a state. So if they want it to be a state, they have to amend the Constitution. And right now, there's a lot of people think they can do it by law. And if they can, and the court upholds it, they could get away with it. But I'm not in favor of it without amending the Constitution. I thank Nathan and Andy, both of you, for participating.
Yeah, thanks, Senator. Appreciate it.
Okay, goodbye.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Nathan and Andy, for participating in today's Public Affairs Program. This has been Senator Chuck Grassley reporting to the people of Iowa.